I want to welcome you to Mount Olive if it's your first time with us, or it's been a long time since you've been with us, or maybe it's been a long time since you've been with us in person. We're really, really glad that you're here. And just so you know, we are in a series called My Money, talking about money. It couldn't have been picked a better time to come to Mount Olive. We're going to talk about money. You know, last week as we started the series, we saw that money, we realized that money is not an end. Money is not an end. None of us really want money just for the sake of having money, right? None of us want money just because, well, now I got money. But rather, money is a means to an end. There is something bigger that we want that we think money can get us, which is why we want money. We don't want money just for money's sake, but we want money for what it can do for us. So money is not something we work for, period, end of story, end of discussion. But rather, money is something that we all hope will eventually work for us. What can it do for me? And last week we saw that Jesus, you know, kind of expanded on this concept. And so we kind of put the period after, you know, money is not an end, it's a means to an end, period. But Jesus kind of challenged us to think a little bit bigger than that. And what Jesus kind of encouraged us to think of is that money is not an end, it's a means to an end that does not end, which means this. Money, something temporary, something that we don't take with us past the grave. Jesus said from heaven's eyes, from heaven's perspective, from God's perspective, that we can actually use something temporary like money that we can't take with us. We can use it to build eternity. We can use it to build eternal reward, which is an unbelievable concept, an unbelievable concept. Well, today in our second message in this series, I want to dive in a little bit more deeply into our perspective of money from this side of eternity, how strong it is in us, and how hard it is to break. But we're going to look at one concept, one thing that we can all do, something Jesus actually asks us to do as followers of his, that breaks our perspective when it comes to money. So what do I mean by our perspective? Here's kind of what I think our perspective is of money on this side of eternity, when we see money. And it kind of goes this way. My money is my money, and it's for me. Right? My money's my money. I worked for it. I earned it. I saved it. I was good with it. You weren't that good with it. You lost yours. That's your problem. But my money is my money, and it's for me. And if money is a means to an end, then my money is a means to an end that is about me. That my money should work for me. It should do something for me because it's my money. And if it's a means to an end, it should do something for me. And this is kind of the concept we have. What are some ends to money? We talked a little bit about this last week, but I just want to kind of go back there a little bit and maybe expand on it a little bit. So when we talk about, okay, my money is my money and it's for me, and money is a means to an end, what do we want money to do for me? There's kind of four areas. We actually learned this in premarital counseling. So here's four areas that we see money as doing for us. Number one, status, right? Money is a means to an end, and for some of us, and here's the deal, all of us probably lean towards one of these four. So as I'm talking through this, kind of do some self-inventory, do some spouse inventory, do some child inventory, right? Say, oh, my child's this one, or my spouse is this one, but don't forget yourself. Which one do you kind of lean towards? So status. If you see money as a status, you're probably the kind of person that struggles to drive an old beater because that would look bad on you. You probably are the kind of person that if your friend or your sibling got something new, then you feel like you should have something new. It's kind of like there's a temptation in your life to always keep up with the Joneses. Now, we probably all have a little bit of a temptation to keep up with the Joneses, but in you, it's extra strong, right? And so, you know, if your friend gets a new house, you kind of feel like, well, we should have a new house. If your friend gets a new car, you feel like you should have a new car. If a friend or a sibling has a hot tub, well, you get the point, right? All of a sudden, it's like, well, they have it, I should have it, because it's a symbol of status. And having nice things makes you feel like you are worth something, that you are successful, and you want others to look up to you, and you look up to others who have money, because money brings about status. It gives you a certain level of status. Now, another thing, some of us view money as security. If you're the type of person that views money as security, you're probably the type of person that when you get a paycheck, you would love to put 95% of your paycheck into savings and live on the other 5%, right? That's you. So if you're like, oh man, I'm totally security, right? Because that's kind of how you feel secure when there's money in the bank, there's money in a savings account. In fact, people who view money as security, they're kind of people that begin to get worried and anxious, not when they start losing money or when they're out of money. At that point, they've already had a heart attack. They start getting anxious when they have their 12-month savings, like they have 12 months of living expenses in a savings, and it's all of a sudden whittled down to only 11 months of money, you know, for living. They could go 11 months now, but they start getting worried about that because they view money as security, and they're losing security as their savings goes down. So if that's you, that's you. A third one is enjoyment. Now, if you view money as enjoyment, you have never had a savings account. Why would you have a savings account? You're deferring joy. In fact, why? You're never even gonna have that joy. Why would you put money, which is enjoyment, something to be used for fun, why would you put that in a savings account? That would be foolish. You get money and you spend money. People who view money as security often have a hard time being gift givers, where people who view money as enjoyment, they love giving gifts. They just give it out. Have some fun, right? If you're the type of person that views money as enjoyment, you might be like one of my friends. His wife said of him that before he got married, he was always on the edge of broke. Not quite broke, but on the edge of broke, right? Because it's like, why would you hold on to money? Use it. Let it flow through you. Have some fun, right? That's how you view money. And then the fourth one is control. If you view money as control, it's probably that you understand that whoever has control of the purse strings has control, right? And having money is a form of control. And so if you view money as control, you might be the type of person that has a hard time in a marriage having a joint bank account. Because all of a sudden, the other person has some control on the money, and they don't always ask you if they can spend the money, and so on. So you kind of view money as control, and it's your way of holding things together in your life. So these are just four common ways that we view money from our perspective. And if money is a means to an end, money is a means to some of these ends. And some of us, if you're security, I mean, you want money not just for money, but you want security. If it's enjoyment, you want enjoyment, and so you chase money for that enjoyment or status or control. Now, just so you know, none of these is more spiritual than the other, okay? So, actually, that's not true. The one that I am is the most spiritual, and the one my wife's isn't quite. You know, it's funny, because I'm definitely security, and my wife is enjoyment. So you can imagine the conversations we have in our household. We're still working through that one after 13 years, but it's all good. But yeah, you know, it doesn't make you more or less spiritual. But as Jesus comes along, he says, listen, money is a means to an end. And we can define those ends, right? Status, control, enjoyment, security. Money is a means to an end. But here's what often happens in our minds from our perspective. We begin to believe that money is the means to the end that we want. And Jesus today in his teaching on money is going to come along and say, money is not the ultimate means to the end you want. Money is not the ultimate means to the end that you want. That although there's this temptation to suddenly to chase money, to put our trust in money, hoping it will give us what we hope it will kick back to us. Control, security, enjoyment, and status. But Jesus comes along and says, whoa, whoa, whoa. You need to understand it's a means, but not the ultimate means to the end you want. Jesus does this in some teaching. In fact, if you have your Bibles, go to Luke chapter 12, starting verse 13. And just to give you the context, Jesus has been doing a whole bunch of teaching, kind of a teaching marathon. And what's happened is the disciples whom he's teaching are right in front of him. And then we're told the crowd is kind of in the background listening in on Jesus' teaching class. And on this particular day, Jesus gets interrupted in his teaching. And we're told this, someone, verse 13 of Luke 12, someone in the crowd said to him, to Jesus, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Now, according to Old Testament law, the oldest son would get a double portion of inheritance. By the first century, what was also true is that the eldest son was responsible for divvying up the inheritance when the parents died. And so this man, this brother, who's obviously not the oldest brother, he's a younger brother, comes to Jesus and he says, I feel like I'm missing out. My brother has not given me what is rightfully mine. And for whatever reason, because none of us want money just for money, there is something that he feels he's losing out on, what money could gain him. And maybe he's feeling like, I'm missing out on some status here. I'm missing out on some security in my life. I'm missing out on enjoyment. And my brother's not letting me have my enjoyment. I'm missing out on control. And my brother's not giving me the inheritance. I have no control. And so an injustice has been done to me. Jesus, you're a teacher. Tell my brother to act justly. And I've already defined what justice looks like. Tell him to give me my inheritance. He's ready to fight. And here's the thing. You fight for what is most important to you. And what you fight for often shows what's most important to you. And to this younger brother, what's most important to him is not his relationship with his brother. He does not come to Jesus and say, Jesus, we've got a problem. How can you help us to reconcile our relationship? He could care less about the relationship. All he cares about, what he's fighting for, is the money. Is what he feels like he's missing out on. And Jesus replies interesting. He replied, man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? And when he says man, it's not like friend man. It's like, dude, who made me? Who made me judge between you? In essence, Jesus says, I'm not getting involved in your sticky little situation. And the interesting thing is, Jesus, we know, is actually going to come back as judge. He is judge. But Jesus says, listen, you want me to step into your situation, but you've got a bigger problem than an inheritance problem. There's something else going on. And then Jesus says, here's why I'm not getting involved in your situation. He said to them, remember his disciples and the crowd listening in on this conversation, he said to them, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Watch out, because money is a means to an end. But somehow, in our earthly perspective, suddenly we can begin to believe that money is the means to the end we want. And greed sets in. And suddenly, all that matters is what I can get and what I'm missing out on when I don't get money. And so he says, be on your guard against greed. Greed sneaks in and it gets a hold of you. And suddenly you start fighting for money, thinking that it's the means to the end you want. And then Jesus said, but life does not consist in an abundance of possessions, meaning life is more than the money you have. It's bigger than that. It's more than that. In essence, Jesus is saying is money is not the ultimate means to the end that you want. You know, you can get all the money. Listen, buddy, I could make the decision and you could get all the inheritance, but you might still not have what you want. You might still miss out on enjoyment. You might still miss out on having security. You might miss out on having control and having status. That life is bigger than that, and it's not the ultimate means to the end you want. And to this, we all think, yeah, maybe, but I kind of disagree. Because if I had more money, my life would be much more secure, right? I mean, Jesus, I get what you're saying, kind of, but let's be honest. If I had more money, I would have a lot more fun. If I had more money, I would have more control. If I had more money, Jesus, I disagree a little bit, because if I had more money, then I would have status. And Jesus gets the tension, and he gets that we're kind of pushing back, and the crowd might push back. So he explains this concept by telling this story, a parable that he made up. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. I've had a bumper crop. I mean, I got all this crop, and I have nowhere to store it. So what should I do? So he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, self, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Money has given him status. I mean, he is wealthy. People look up to him. How did you get so successful? Money has given him security. You have grain laid up for many years. You are secure. Money has given him, abundance has given him enjoyment. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Life has given him, money has given him control. He has all these things that money, from our perspective, gets us. And he thinks, I've got it made, but he forgot something. Actually, Jesus says he forgot someone. But God said to him, God. How does God play into this situation? God showed up and he said, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? See, this man decided to live as though he was an owner, and he forgot that he's simply a manager. He lived as though he was an owner. He was an owner of his abundance. In fact, he was living as though he was an owner of his own life, of life itself. But here's the reality of it. Everything that you have and everything that I have are things that have been given to us, including, get this, your very life. Think about this. Did you decide when you would be born? Did you decide your birthday? Did you decide the moment you would be conceived? Did you decide the first time that you would suck in oxygen and allow that oxygen to hit your lungs? Did you decide any of that? No. Even our lives were given to us as gifts. And God says, I'm going to give you life. Now, how are you going to manage your life? And all of our abundance has been given to us by God. And God says, I'm giving you money. I'm giving you abundance. Now, how are you going to manage it? Because it's yours, but it's not yours. You're not an owner of it. You are simply a manager of it. What will you do with what's been given to you? And Jesus says, whoever lives like this man, whoever lives like an owner, he says, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. And what Jesus is meaning is this. If you look at money and finances and abundance only from this world's perspective, which is this, it's my money, it's for me. It's my money, and my money is for me. And money is a means to an end, and the end revolves around me, and I'm going to build up my kingdom. Jesus says, anyone who lives like that as though their money is theirs and they own it, they will experience what this rich man experienced, which was loss. He experienced loss. He lost absolutely everything. He thought that money was the means to the end he wanted. But what Jesus was saying is, no. Money is not the ultimate means to the end you want. Even if you have money, you can lose out on security. Even if you have money, you may not be all that happy. Even if you have money, you may not have status. Even if you have money, you may not have control. You forgot about God. So in the temptation to begin to trust in money, Jesus says, no, money is not the ultimate means. God is the ultimate means. In fact, God is the means and God is the end that you really want. And Jesus would go on and he would say, listen, here's one thing that you can do to be rich towards God. Because maybe one of the questions is, okay, so how do I be rich towards God? Jesus said, this is how it will be for anyone who stores up for themselves and is not rich, someone who is not rich towards God. So what does it look like to be rich towards God? And what Jesus says next, he begins to define what it looks like to be rich towards God. And you can read it. We're not going through the next little section. But in essence, what Jesus means to be rich towards God means this. Trust him. Trust him. Trust in God. And if you read the next part, Jesus said, listen, do not worry about your life, about what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. Don't look at the lilies of the field and the grasses of the field. They're here today and gone tomorrow, but God has dressed them in splendor. And look at the birds of the air. They don't labor or spin, and yet God takes care of them. If God takes care of the lilies of the field and he takes care of the birds of the air, will he not much more take care of you? Would you simply trust him? Be rich towards God by trusting him. Don't trust in money, but put your trust in God as the ultimate means to the end that you want. And then Jesus says this, but seek first Seek first, trust him. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. And God will take care of all of this. And then Jesus ends this entire section saying this: do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Do not be afraid. And here's the thing. Fear is a great driver. If you look at our culture, fear drives our lives in so, so many areas, including money. Fear is a great driver, including our view of money. See, if you view money as status, fear will drive you to get more money, because fear of never being quite enough will drive you to get more money, because you view money as status. If you view money as security, fear of having insecurity will drive you to get more and more and more money. If you view money as enjoyment, fear of missing out will drive you to get more and more and more money. If you view money as control, fear of not having control will drive you to get more and more money. Jesus says, would you stop being afraid? Stop being driven by your fear. And here's why. Because your Father in heaven, now I don't know what kind of father you grew up with, but let me tell you about your Father in heaven. Jesus says, this is your Father in heaven. He has been pleased to give you the kingdom, which means this: your status is already set in the kingdom. Your security is already taken care of in the kingdom. Your enjoyment is already taken care of in the kingdom. Your control, you don't need control. You've already been given the kingdom. God is in control. So all the things that we chase money for, listen, don't be afraid. You're already taken care of. Your Father in heaven has been pleased to give you the kingdom. So would you trust him? Would you trust him? And then Jesus gets really practical and he says this: sell your possessions and give to the poor. What? Jesus, do you ever kind of get frustrated at Jesus? Because he gives this great teaching all throughout the New Testament, and then he goes to application, and it's this extreme application. You're like, come on. Why so, sell your possessions? Can't I just trust you? And Jesus is saying, yeah, but trust has action to it. And there's always going to be a temptation to grab onto money and to hold onto money for whatever means you want your money to accomplish for you. Security, enjoyment, status, control. There's going to be a temptation. So let go of your temptation. Actually give money away. Sell your possessions. And then Jesus says, provide purses for yourselves so that that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. The exact same teaching as last week, right? That Jesus says you can use temporary money to build eternal treasure. Temporary things to build eternal treasure. So trust me, money is a means, but it's not the means. Only God is the means to the end that you really want. And then he closes this whole section off by saying, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And where your heart is probably where your treasure is also. What you fight for shows what's most important to you. What you fight for shows what's most important to you. So where's your heart? And where's your treasure? In essence, Jesus' whole teaching on this is simply this. It's one thing that we can do to change the perspective. And that's simply trust God. And the outworking of trust is build real treasure. Trust God and then start building real treasure. Understand that money is a means, but it's not the ultimate means to the end you want. And when you start to understand that it's not the ultimate means to the end you want, you'll start to trust God more, and your trust will flow out of you as you start to build real treasure. So last week, I encouraged all of us to go home and look at an inventory of all of our finances and see what percentage is building our kingdom here on earth. And what of our finances is building God's kingdom? And there's nuances to that, because even things like cars and houses can be something that we build for our own kingdom, but we can also use those things. All of our possessions can be used to build into other people's lives. And so there's a little bit of a nuance to that thinking. What part of my finances, what part of my life is going to build eternal treasure? Well, what I want to encourage you to do today is I want to encourage you to pull the trigger on some things that you've been thinking about for a long, long time. that God has been working in your heart for some time to get involved. Maybe it's to give some money away. Maybe it's to get involved in a ministry with your own time and energy. But you've just never really pulled the trigger. And some of it has to do with fear. And maybe you've thought for a while, you know, I'd love to sponsor a child. God has been prompting me to join with Compassion Canada and sponsor a child to give to those who are poor. But I've never pulled the treasure because, or pulled the trigger because, you know, there's this fear. Well, what if I don't have enough money and I lose my security? What if I'm missing out on some enjoyment because I'm giving some money away? What if I don't have the status? What if I'm losing control? And there's fear that's playing into it. I want to tell you today, your Father in heaven has been pleased to give you the kingdom. That means you're taken care of already. Would you be willing to trust him and start building real treasure? Maybe you've had on your heart to invest in a pregnancy care center. And maybe it's with time, energy, maybe it's with your own money, and you've never pulled the trigger. There's fear that comes along with that. I want to encourage you this week to consider trusting in God and pulling the trigger on some of the things you feel God has already been prompting on you. That's an act of trust, saying, God, I trust you with my possessions. I understand that money is a means, but it's not the means. God, you are the means to the end that I want. You are the means to the end I want. So in closing to this message today, we're actually going to have a story, an interview with a family who a few years ago, actually a couple, who a few years ago decided to take the leap of faith and do something that probably a lot of us would think is a little crazy, and yet they trusted God and they built real treasure. This is the Dave and Sandra story.
Hey, Dave and Sandra. A few years ago, you entered into the process of becoming foster parents and fostering. Tell us a little bit about how that journey went for you.
Okay, so it was back in probably 2018 that we were both working, and I just knew that there was something more we were supposed to be doing, but I didn't know what. So I pray about it. I'm like, Lord, what do you want us to do, you know, because, and at the same time praying that it was a missionary work overseas because we're homebodies. And not that I don't, I love missionaries, I admire missionaries, but not for us. But I wasn't really getting an answer. Things were just going on as usual. And so every so often the feeling with him, he's like, Lord, what do you want us to do? Like, and then it was Christmas of 2018. We were watching a movie called The Christmas Hope, which we'd watched like three or four times previous at Christmas, and about this little girl that was orphaned just before Christmas, and her social worker had to take her in because she didn't have a foster home available. As it turned out, the social worker ended up adopting this little girl. It was a real tearjerker of a movie, and I'd always, you know, shed the little happy tears, but this time this feeling came over me, and it's like, oh my goodness, what's going on? And it was just like this overwhelming feeling. And I got up and I left the room and I was crying and I went into the kitchen. And I'm like, I just had this consuming feeling like, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do foster care. And I'm like, Lord, you can't be serious. Like, at my age, you want me to take in kids? I've been there, done that, and it's over. And I thought, this is not the Holy Spirit. This is me. I'm just being emotional. I'm probably tired, and it's going to go away, and that'll be it. But this feeling didn't pass. Like, for days, it just kept becoming more consuming. And so I said, Lord, if this is what you want us to do, then Dave has to be on board, or it's just not going to happen. I'm not going to do it on my own, that's for sure. So I mentioned it to Dave. I said, pretty sure the Lord wants us to do foster care. And he looked at me like kind of weird. And he says, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. He said, well, how do we do it? I said, I don't know, but we'll find out.
And what was going through your mind at that point?
I'm not sure what really went through my mind, but I was at peace with that. Like, I figured if God is telling her this, then it's got to be that we're supposed to do it. So yeah, it was okay with me.
So then at that point, you decided to enter into the process of becoming certified. And I understand that was a bit of a process. But I understand you have a little girl now. How did that all come together?
We do. We have a little girl. It'll be 2 years in May that we've had her. I didn't start the process right away. I waited a while because we were planning, you know, to retire, quit our jobs and whatnot. And so then when I did phone to find out, you know, what the process was, and then I was told, oh, this process can take 6 months to a year. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, better get started. So we did, and yeah, there's a lot involved, but we started the process. And in March of 2019, we had our home assessment and a home study done, and that's like the final step to be licensed. And then in May, we still hadn't heard anything, so I emailed the social worker May 22nd, that morning, May 22nd, and I said, do you have any news for us? Like, you know, we're still waiting for a kid. And she called me right away, and she said, do you want a little girl? And I'm like, yeah. And I said, when? And she said, today. And I'm like, okay. So she gave me some details on this little girl, and she said, if she can't come to you guys, she said, she's going to be like a long ways, like northern Alberta, and that's going to be detrimental because her siblings are all around here. And I'm like, yeah, sure, you know. So 6 o'clock that evening, we had her.
You were just thrown right into the fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So I just have a question, if I'm allowed to ask. How old are you guys?
I'm 60.
64. Wow. I would dare say that you're not normal in the sense I don't know a lot of 60 and 64-year-olds that are thinking, hey, let's start with children all over again, you know, with fostering and so on. Most people your age are thinking, how can I spend more time and money on myself rather than giving it away? So that's unreal. I guess kind of leads me to a question. What fears or struggles or doubts did you maybe have to wrestle with as, you know, obviously you were kind of like, God, not now, but what were some of those fears and doubts and struggles that you maybe wrestled with at that time?
Mostly, I think, health-wise, if we deteriorated too fast, of course, but didn't really worry about that. It was mostly, if it's a difficult child, are we going to be able to handle it?
I don't really think I had that many fears because I figure if God's calling us to do it, he's going to equip us to do it. He doesn't call us to do things he doesn't equip us for. So, wow. But yeah.
That's cool. You know, we've talked a little bit about you guys in the sense of what you kind of gave up and so on. What has kicked back to you in the sense that, you know, you think about we're giving, but what has been given back to you because of this experience of being able to have this girl in your home this last year and a half to 2 years?
I would have to say a stronger faith. Okay. When she first came to us, we could see that she had this... I'm not sure how to explain it, but like she was kind of in tune to Jesus. And over time, as we teach her different things, like the watering process, she seemed to grow quicker in it. And just the fact that she goes around the house with all of these writing scriptures, singing hymns, things like that, and the programs on TV that she watches. It's sort of like she fortifies our faith.
Wow.
I think probably more than what she's getting from us, but I mean, it could be the same.
Right.
She has a real heart for Jesus, and we tell her that God has a plan for her, and we're teaching her to disciple, and she knows God has a plan for her. It just seems so obvious to us that we're just feeding this this hunger that she has for more knowledge of God.
Oh, cool. You know, I've got young kids, lot of them have a lot of energy. And I'm sure that tires you out from time to time. Does it also give you energy in the sense that you're giving out, but it's like it's filling back up?
I think so.
I can say she's either keeping us young or making us older really fast. I don't know which.
Oh, that's good. Last question, or maybe second last question. How has this journey confirmed or reoriented in you what you view as important or as you think of treasure and where our treasure is? You know, often we can get sidetracked with, you know, building our treasure here, but how has this kind of helped to reorient you as to what's really important?
There's what can you take with you, really? I mean, there's really not much you can take with you, but you can leave a lot behind. And I think just leading this little girl to all the knowledge we can of who Jesus is and the influence that he will have on her life and her future is huge, I think.
Cool. And last question. If you could go back to 2 or 3 years ago, would you do it again?
Absolutely.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
a delightful yeah. child.
You wouldn't change it for the world?
No.
Not a bit.
Well, thank you very much.
Trust God. Build real treasure. This week, as God's been prompting you, maybe to invest in some things and fears held you back, your story's going to look different. God speaks to us differently. You may not take up fostering, and that's okay. But in what ways is God maybe challenging you to say, would you trust me and say yes to what I'm calling you to do and build some real treasure? As Jesus said, don't be afraid. Your Father in heaven has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Let me pray with you. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for how it's challenging us. Thank you for your people. And I know so many of the people of this body live this out daily. And I know there is so much treasure being built in heaven through this group of believers. And I pray that as your people, we would grow more and more, that we would trust you more and more, that we would gain a new perspective of our money, the money that you've given us to manage, and then help you hold us accountable to. God, would we gain new perspective of what we can do with what you've given us to invest in real treasure, to invest in what lasts in eternity. And so we pray these things in your name. We give you our lives. We give you our things. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.